Welcome to Radio Out There. Barry Eaton here. And two very talented ladies this week, talking on very different subjects, but I guess there is a link. One will be talking about a Navajo medicine man, the other, the goddess. Our first guest, Valerie Ulbricht. Valerie's latest book is called The Story Behind the Story, and we get to meet a Navajo medicine man. Now, I don't know about you, but I do not know a lot about the indigenous tribes of the United States. Yes, of course, as a kid, you know, we all used to go and watch cowboy and Indian movies and all these things, but that's Hollywood. What's that got to do with real life? We see all sorts of things in the news at the present stage about the Dakota Springs in the headlines because of what's going on there. Yes, we know that indigenous tribes all around the world have so many issues and have had for quite some time. But now we're going to meet a man. We're going to go behind the story with Valerie Ulbricht. Hi, Valerie. It's been a while since we talked on radio.
Yeah, it's lovely to be back on radio out there.
Good. Excellent. Now, you've just released your third book, The Story Behind the Story. I have just finished reading it not that long ago. I've got to say, I thoroughly enjoyed every word.
How wonderful for both of us.
Yeah, no, it's true. I wouldn't say that. I don't always say that to authors. I mean, I enjoy various things, but I really found a lot in this book because it's delving into something that most of us know nothing about. And it's not only just the indigenous world that we enter here, but it's the world of the Navajo Indian, the medicine man, so many areas that maybe we've seen movies or something like that. But what got you started on this whole area?
Of indigenous medicine?
Well, yes, and also basically the story, though, about the Navajo. What got you into the Navajo area?
Okay, so I was in America in 2010 when I very unexpectedly met Elroy through a friend of mine. We were traveling around together, and this friend said to me, "Oh, would you like to meet Elroy? He's a friend of mine. He's a medicine man." And I just looked at him and he knew that the answer was, of course. And so we went there straight away. We weren't far from Elroy's reservation. And, you know, obviously he introduced me, my friend Tom Golitz, who was very instrumental in this because he's a friend of Elroy's, and he brought us together. And we, in Navajo way, had a ceremonial welcome and, like, smoking and blessings and then a little bit of talking about who I was and why I was here and the reason I was in America was on the Search for Mother book tour. And then Elroy looked at me after about half an hour and he said, "My mother Lucy, her medicine woman, always told me that the person who would write our story would come from far away. Let's start." So we did.
So we started
straight away. So it was the invitation and the way that the invitation happened, the synchronicities and coincidences that brought me to meet him. But it was also bigger than that, if I can just do a quick overview I'm coming from.
Sure.
So my first career as a speech pathologist, whilst very fulfilling, and I learnt a lot and worked in amazing sectors of health, it was always frustrating for me because speech pathology is a very science-based, black-and-white approach to health and specifically communication. And so it's about looking at the body and the mechanics of communication and healthy communication. So that sort of propelled me into studying a lot of Eastern medicine. As you know, I teach yoga, and I studied massage and hypnotherapy and Reiki. And that study of Eastern health traditions broadened it out for me a lot, because that brings in the mind and spirit element to the body.
Yeah.
But despite that, I still felt that there was more to freeing people's voices. And for some reason, that feeling of there was more led me to work, to start to work with Indigenous people, with our own Australian Aboriginal people. And here, in remote communities around Australia, and here in this area of delivering a speech pathology service, I saw that the aspects of culture and country and belonging and family and community were part of their health philosophy as much as the spirit and the mind and the body.
Mm.
So when and when I put that on the whole circle, the holistic circle of communication, it was like a big for me. And also to see them talking about all of these aspects through the very sincere way of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Indigenous way of telling story, and what they told through that, what they brought to the whole way of looking at people and health. And also to me, I've also studied a Master's of Writing. So writing for me was, you know, always something that, you know, provided me with a very authentic way of speaking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, certainly the authenticity comes through loud and clear in your book, The Story Behind the Story, Story of Elroy Begay. He is a fascinating man. He's a medicine man, and I guess most people conjure up an image of what a medicine man would look like. But tell us a bit about Elroy.
Well, interestingly enough, as it turns out, his birthday is exactly the same as mine.
Oh, you're joking.
There is another synchronicity.
Really?
Yeah. So what can I tell you? He's a traditional Navajo medicine man. He lives between humanity and divinity. That's one of the reasons why I said yes to his story.
Yeah.
His whole story is also about the complexities and the struggles that lie within each and every one of us, and our longing to live peacefully with them. So while it's a biography of his events in his life, it's also a universal story of the struggle to live with our own struggles and to really embrace the uniqueness of who each of us are. So Elroy is a paraplegic, and he became a paraplegic through an accident within his family when he was aged one. So he is also fascinating because he grew up between two health traditions of having rehab in Western medicine and also being the chosen medicine man for his clan.
Mm.
So there's an example of the complexity and the struggle that he has had.
I think the interesting thing that I find about him, or one of the interesting things, is that as a child he was tormented and beaten and all sorts of things by other kids. Now, as the medicine man, as you say, the chosen medicine man, they are coming to him for ceremony and for healing. So isn't it amazing the balance that emerges in situations like this as we go through life?
Yeah, that's right. And that's really, you know, again, that comes to one of his struggles, because as the medicine man, he cannot say no to these people.
Mm.
So his struggle was, so what am I to do? How am I to live peacefully within myself about this? And one of the creeds of his clan is acceptance. So it's acceptance of the hand you've been been dealt.
Have been dealt with, yeah. Well, of course, in our society, we look at so many healers that hit rock bottom before they even start their healing, and that may be much later in life. But Elroy started, as you said, at one. Then he had another tragic accident a bit later on. So he is a living example of healers having to hit rock bottom before they can come and be of widespread service within their community.
Yes, and that's right. And in the course of this writing this book, which took 4 years, pretty much all of 4 years, I was coming and going between Australia and his reservation. I met a number of other medicine men, and not only Navajo ones, and a very high proportion of them have a disability.
Yeah.
And I asked Elroy about this one day, and he said, people with disability are chosen healers because they understand acceptance and forgiveness.
Mm.
And so that's one of the things that brings healing, as you and I know, emotional and spiritual struggles cause physical disturbances.
Yeah.
So when you come... the story behind the story, and there's something here that's about acceptance and forgiveness, and then that flows up through to the physical body, becoming healed as well. So, so certainly his creed of acceptance and forgiveness, acceptance of yourself and your uniqueness, is one of the layers of the story behind the story.
Yeah, very much so. And another lovely little thing that you talk about is the fact that there was such a strong spiritual link. You talked about earlier in our chat about being born on the same day, but there was a spiritual link where he ended up calling you Bamboo Girl and was waiting for you.
Yes, that's right. That's right, and that's where the, you know, that's where the synchronicities and the spiritual connection and the coincidences, you know, all happen. And so...
coincidence or synchronicity?
Well, I would go with synchronicity,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's quite, they're quite different, really.
Yes.
So, I mean, his place where he used to play as a small boy was at Bamboo Springs. And I had a place in my back garden in Brisbane in Australia, where I used to play when I was little, that had this huge bamboo bush in it, and my brothers used to go in there and play, and that's how the Bamboo Girl thing happened.
Yeah. Patrick Carmack and the theme from The Last of the Mohicans. You're listening to Radio Out There. Our first guest this week, Valerie Albrecht. It's such an important thing with so many of the Indigenous people when they look at their ancestors and the importance of ancestors. And there's a lovely thought that you had when we can get onto this subject, and I'll quote from the book. What if we in the West introduced ourselves from our treasure chest of ancestors rather than our profession, place of work, or residence? That is a very profound observation. That really struck me. Do you want to have a comment?
What if we did?
Yeah, what if we did? I mean, how different would our society be rather than saying, oh, look at me, I'm a doctor, I'm engineer, I'm this, and I live there in that big house. We get away from ego, don't we, and into who we really are.
Well, that's right. And, I mean, that's one of the gifts that Elroy brings through this book, that gift of embrace the uniqueness of yourself. And here's another way of looking at it. This is how you look at the uniqueness of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and you as you've read it, you read how Navajo people introduce themselves through the mother, father, the maternal grandparent side and the paternal side.
Yeah.
But it's also more than that. It's there's an element of the four sacred mountains around their land that comes into their name. There's an they're often given animal names which describe something about their character that is related to that animal. They're often given a descriptive name, like Elroy's called Cradle Boy because the cradle being his wheelchair, or, you know, Elroy and the Cradle Boy forever. And so they have multiple names, which, of course, reflects the multiplicities of who we are. We're not just a radio announcer or a writer, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what brings in the broad scope, doesn't it? That we limit ourselves by defining ourselves as a radio announcer, a writer, a doctor, a politician, or whatever. We define ourselves with that, and it's such a narrow little area that we work within.
Yes, that's right. And it adds to our struggle. And in the West, you know, the search, well, who am I? It adds to that when we just look at ourselves like that. And that whole thing that I wrote in there that you quoted, you know, as I was writing the story, there was Elroy's, what he was telling me, the facts of his story. And then there was all this processing of that I was having to do, which led to this type of question, what if we in the West? And so that's what led in part. You can see the book is written in two fonts.
Yeah.
So one font is Elroy's voice, and the other font is my reflections on particular experiences there.
Yeah, it's good, that one. I like that. Yeah. It must have been interesting for you because you were, of course, communicating with Elroy in English. He would quite often whip off and ring somebody and have a chat to them in Navajo, which you couldn't understand. I believe you tried to learn Navajo at one stage.
Oh, it's impossible for me.
Well, I mean, the wonderful code talkers in the Second World War certainly took advantage of the fact that nobody could understand Navajo except another Navajo.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dear. So you still don't know any Navajo?
No. Well, Avnachi, that word is in there. That's the word for acceptance.
Ah, okay. Well, it's the start, isn't it?
Yeah. So, certainly, I mean, Elroy's English is pretty good. And, I mean, one of the other stories behind the story that is actually another whole book is the fact that he married Amy, who's a New Yorker. A Western white woman, professional New Yorker, who actually came over for a ceremony with Elroy, and then the rest is, you know, their life together. So she was often around. So she doesn't really speak Navajo either, but she was able to interpret in the sense of what was going on, perhaps. And quite often we would also go, when we went on our journeys around the reservation, looking for Deer Spring people, and Deer Spring being his clan, stories, we would take a nephew of Elroy's as an interpreter for me.
Oh, that was great. The one thing that also really struck deep in my heart, I guess, is the importance that they put on ceremony, particularly with healing. And there are so many forms of healing that Elroy works out as a medicine man. The singing, the chanting, the trembling hand, which I find fascinating, and also the peyote healing.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the ceremonies and that you observed.
Well, there were many that it was permissible for me to go to, and
yep.
many that I was, it was not appropriate. And Elroy was, you know, very fastidious about that. So, and of course, we always asked the person coming to ceremony if it was okay that I stayed.
Of course.
And, you know, he would explain that I was learning and, you know, writing a book about his life, and is all that okay. So, well, I'll tell you about a couple, because there's some that were really a huge lots of learning for me. So there was one young 17-year-old boy, who a Navajo boy, who had been assaulted, and he had been very badly assaulted in Phoenix, and had been on life support, and on his way in back out of hospital, he came to see Elroy. Now, this is the other interesting thing about their medicine and their a way of looking at it. Like, we in the West often go through these great, huge internal dramas of, should I go to my GP?
Hmm.
Should I go to the naturopath? You know, what should I do? And if I go to one or the other, you know, like, how will I know what's reputable? And
sure.
they'll give me conflicting information. So it's not like that at all over there. They will go to a Western doctor and a medicine man on the same trip.
I think this is fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
The way they approach it.
Yes.
So they stopped in, and this boy was in a terrible state, all bruised, and he was almost like he was still in a coma state to me, but he was walking in it. So it was called an earth ceremony. So, okay, there's so much to say about ceremonies. So,
well, just tell us how it impacted on you.
Well, part of the earth ceremony was that he had to go outside with his father to a tree and do a prayer and scatter some of the sacred corn pollen, which is a whole other story about why that's sacred corn pollen.
Yeah.
And then come back in, and there was more praying and, you know, chanting. And so I was just sitting, you know, reverently, and then it was finished and they left. And so I asked Elroy to explain a little bit about what that was, and he said, well, the main thing about earth ceremony is that first you give thanks for your life, for still being alive
mm-hmm.
after a trauma.
Yeah.
And second, you ask forgiveness of the people who caused the distress. And I looked at him and I said, well, okay, we all know how important forgiveness is, but, you know, this boy is 17. He's barely out of his coma. It's a pretty big ask, like a week after the assault. And Elroy just looked at me so sternly and he said, but he's not doing it alone.
Lovely.
So that was quite...
That says it all, really, doesn't it?
That's really remarkable.
Yeah.
But I'd really like to tell you about another one as well, which was very, very profound. And it was called, it's called a blackening ceremony. And so, so I get a phone call at 5:30 in the morning, like, okay, blackening ceremony, Chuba City, you're driving, let's go, 4 hours across the desert in the dark before the sun comes up. And anyway, we get there, and it's, we go, Elroy's carried up in his wheelchair up the steps, and so they've had the fire on to make the ashes, so the room is stiflingly hot. And the ashes are cool because we're going to use the ash in the ceremony. The whole family is sitting around singing and praying, waiting for Elroy. But interestingly, all the young people are on their phones and their laptops at the same time. So this was always really affronting to me how the sacred was in the mundane for Navajos. Mm. And anyway, I'll just digress for one sentence. And I asked Elroy about this one day, and again I got this really stern reply, and it was, "Don't you go putting your Western ceremony standards on mine. My God's bigger than all of that." So, anyway, so we're back to the lounge room, and the first thing that happens is that I'm putting the cool blackened ash on the woman's skin. Then, she's told her story to Elroy a little bit before this, so she's blackened with the ash. She's given a mixture of cattail drink, I suppose. It is mixed up. I don't know what it was mixed up with, water maybe, or maybe it was a tea, which, of course, promptly makes her vomit, which the whole ceremony is prepared for, so there's a plastic bag there. And then a blanket is put over her head, and steaming stones and herbs are put in for her to be in like an inhalation steam situation. And then she comes out. When she's ready, everyone continues to sing and chant until she comes out. And she's looking like quite well, like weak, but quite well. Mm. And, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, this is like an inhalation treatment. This is like a steam treatment. This is like a sauna.
Mm.
This is like a stomach pump.
Yeah.
This is like a detoxification, like a cleansing ceremony.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when you put, the blackened ash on your skin, it's again like a detoxification. The warmth of it, even though it's cool, opens your pores, and it's detoxification. But it's also, in a spiritual sense, it's about protection. It's about what you don't want to not be around you, so that you can just concentrate on this purifying and releasing this illness in from the spiritual to the physical level. And so I'm just thinking, very amazedly and humbly in the end, it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's just different words,
just different
in
techniques,
different ways.
Yeah, exactly, and it works.
Of doing this, and she's come out well. And Emily follows up, his patients like all doctors do, and she remained well. So she had come to that ceremony from the gynecologist because the problem was acute stomach cramps. And so, and gynecological problems all her life. And Elroy explained that she had told him that she had had a termination in her 20s, but she forgot to ask the spirit of the unborn child permission and to say, ask forgiveness for having to have made that decision.
Mm.
So there was the spiritual element.
Yeah.
In the illness.
Yeah.
But that was a really, really remarkable experience, because I saw the similarities in all the things that happened in that ceremony with so much of what we do in both Western and Eastern medicine.
Yeah, it all comes together. Valerie, look, it's fascinating. You've really whetted everybody's appetite, I think, to be able to get your book, because you go into so much more detail in the whole story, the background, everything, the story behind the story by Valerie Albrecht. And, look, it's now available. It just came out a couple of weeks ago, published by Austin Macaulay Publishers in London. And is the book readily available? Can people pick it up on?
So you can get it through their website, and you can get it through Amazon. You can get it through my website, which is www.theoceansofenergy.com.
Yep.
Or you can just send me an email and I can send you one. And the benefit of that is that I can write you a note in it.
What a wonderful thought. Okay. So I'll put your email address and the website up on our site as well, so people will be able to contact you on that one. Valerie, look, it's been really lovely talking to you, and congratulations on this book. I think you've explored, you've gone into depths there that most of us have no idea about, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Barry. It was 6 years from when I was asked the book being out as a book. So that's a long time of commitment and believing.
Yeah, but it's been worth it. Well done.
Oh, yes.
Valerie Albrecht, now we enter the realm of the goddess. That we're in the realm of the goddess with Annette Cantor from her CD Songs to the Goddess, and that is a tribute to probably the best known goddess of them all, and that is Venus, the goddess of love. Let's explore the realm through the eyes and the words of Karen Tate and her new book, Goddess 2.0, Advancing a New Path Forward. Karen, it's lovely to talk to you again. We haven't spoken since your book, Goddess Calling.
Yeah, that's been since I think 2014. It has been a little bit of time.
Ah, time slips away, doesn't it? Now, Karen, tell me, why the new book, Goddess 2.0? What's the story behind that?
Well, Goddess 2.0, Advancing a New Path Forward, gets across the idea that the values of the sacred feminine, or the values that are missing in society that have put us where we find ourselves, have put us in this place where so many are looking for that new normal, looking for a world where there's a level playing field, a world of partnership, instead of austerity, domination, exploitation. And with Goddess 2.0, We talk about God of spirituality all grown up, if you will. It goes beyond, you know, just learning about ancient goddesses. It gets more into how the values of the sacred feminine can actually help us make a better world, save ourselves, if you will, as cliche as that may sound to some.
Not at all. Now, you've got several authors who've contributed to the book, and, of course, yourself as well, and you write in the book that most of us have come to realize patriarchy, ruled by a male-dominated society, revering solely a male god, is not working. Are you finding that right across the board?
Well, you know, let me clarify a little bit, because sometimes when people hear that, they automatically think we are saying that all men are bad, and we're not. You know, we live in a patriarchal world, which means a male-dominated society. And unfortunately, the male-dominated society that we are living through right now is the masculine on steroids, if you will. It's the dark side of the masculine. And, you know, what we're saying is that has led the world to you know, this point in time where, you know, we're facing climate change, you know, that could destroy the earth. We have multinational corporations who are controlling our governments. You know, we have 70% of women in the United States retiring in poverty, millions of children going to bed hungry, multinational corporations taking hold of natural resources like water. You know, it's gotten to the point where this corporatism, this predator capitalism, which is, you know, part of the domination of patriarchy, that, you know, that has to go, because it simply doesn't serve the most of us. I think there's, less than 300 people, in the United States, and across the world, that hold most of the wealth on the planet.
Mm.
And that's way too much power, way too much control, way too much wealth in the hands of too few people. And it's resulted in the rest of us being little more than pawns. You know, hamsters on a wheel just trying to keep up. And, you know, we're saying we've had enough of it and we have an alternative to this dominator patriarchal model that isn't serving the most of us anymore.
Okay, now when we talk about a goddess, naturally the thought immediately comes God / goddess, religion. Are we only talking about religion here? Because we've got so many people around the world turning away from religion.
Well, you know, I think we're talking about spirituality. I think we're talking about spiritual courage.
Yep.
I think we're talking about morality. I think we're talking about making our spirituality and our politics in sync, reconciling the two of those. For instance, if you care about the earth, then can you put somebody in office that is going to let multinational corporations just wreak havoc across the globe? You know, can you put people in office who don't believe in climate change, you know, who are going to maybe run pipelines that are going to poison the aquifers of water that we need to, you know, to take care of our plants, to, you know, to feed ourselves, for us to drink. You know, we've gotten to the point where the only thing that matters to too many people is the bottom line.
Mm.
Greed has just run amok.
Yeah. Yeah, but how can we change something like that? I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, is it?
Well, no, I don't think so. But, you know, I believe that people are showing us that they're disgusted with the establishment, whether we live, you know, no matter what country we live in. You see what happened with Brexit in the UK. You see Donald Trump gets elected here in the United States. And I don't think Donald Trump got elected because most of the people in the United States are anti-immigrant, homophobic, you know, and sexist. I think people heard Donald Trump say he was going to bring back jobs. that he was going to get rid of bad trade deals that shipped all of American jobs overseas to countries that basically, you know, multinational corporations can't get away with paying slave wages to. I think people are doing what they can in the current system to say enough is enough. Business as usual is not going to work anymore. Now, I think with Donald Trump, Americans made a big mistake because I don't think they really understood what they were getting. But I think it was a desperate attempt to say we need something different because the establishment doesn't serve the people anymore. And I think people like Bernie Sanders, who this book is dedicated to, actually, him and Leanne Eisler, I think Bernie Sanders really awakened a lot of Americans to the problems that we have known are happening, and helped us give voice to those problems.
Yeah, okay, look, I don't want to make this about politics, but earlier in the year, my specialist on astrology and numerology, who tipped last year, forecast, I should say, that Trump would win, talks about the 45th presidency. 45 in numerology adds up to a 9, which is the number of reform. Now, as far as the astrology and numerology concerned, it's basically a destiny move to have Trump there. I'm not defending him. I'm not doing anything. Please believe me. I'm only speaking on the peripheral here. And if he is the institute, shall we say, or the person who starts the reform, then maybe that's what happens, and that's what we're talking about here, because that reform needs to happen not only in the US, because our program goes all over the world, and there are many people listening in other countries nodding their head probably and saying, yeah, we need reform too. We need to make changes. We need to have more balance between the male and the female energies in our community.
Well, yeah, and even though I don't believe that Donald Trump is the answer, I think he is the catalyst.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Yes, I agree.
He is the catalyst because so many people are getting up off their sofa now. They're activated. They're motivated. They are organizing resistance. And I think we're going to be in a really good position to usher in the change because there's so many of us now and so many people are awake and using their voice. And, I think this solidarity, this partnership that's happening with the 99% is going to be what's going to push this because, you know, things only happen when the grassroots gets motivated and makes it happen.
Mm.
You know, you hear that cliche, change happens from the bottom up, not the top down.
Yeah, yeah, true.
And I think Donald Trump is so egregious, so distasteful, so ignorant that he has people up in arms that normally are just complacent.
They're just sitting
and
back.
And satisfied.
Yeah, fair enough. Karen, as I said, I really don't want to make this about politics. I think I'm, like most people, I'm fed up to the back teeth with politics all over the world. Let's refer back to the goddess discussion that we're having. And one of the chapters in here is written by Professor Andrew Gurevich. And I thought that was the most outstanding of all the contributions. And if I can quote here, saying that we need to shift into a right hemisphere dominant perspective, define our culture along the lines of empathy and compassion instead of narcissism and competition, or we will not survive. That's just one quote. And I think this is where maybe a lot of people can identify with the goddess movement when we're talking about words like compassion and empathy.
Well, yes, I agree. Empathy, compassion, nurturing, caring, sharing, partnership.
And that's the feminine.
Level playing fields, you know, equality, all of those things which are goddess ideals,
yeah.
Which are in such short supply in our world right now. Yeah, Andrew did a great job with that essay.
He certainly did. And one of the other things he identifies in that is, and I'd never thought of it like this before, the goddess Columbia, the U.S. goddess Columbia, who everybody will know from Columbia Pictures, and also that the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor, and so on. That actually is a goddess.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor, you know, goes back to, we call her the political goddess, and not that we want to, you know, we're trying to get away from politics, but, you know, she has her roots on the Palatine Hill in Rome.
In Rome, yeah.
Because, you know, they used to deify virtues like liberty. And, you know, honestly, when you go to Washington, D.C., the Supreme Court is, you know, filled with goddess imagery, like Athena, for instance.
Yeah.
The Library of Congress, all of the, you know, all of the educational topics there, all of the virtues, they are all shown as you know, as the feminine, you know, and yes, there's Columbia on top of you know, the Congressional Dome. You know, she's there in plain sight. It feels like we just have to stop giving lip service to these values and these virtues, and actually start insisting that. You know, these ideas be the way we govern, you know,
yeah.
Because, you know, morality, morality has to be in our budgets, you know, morality has to be in our laws, you know, what we give license to, you know, those things start with our mythology.
It
you
does.
Know?
It does. And that's where it all goes back to, doesn't it? I mean, in the ancient civilizations, we had a mixture of gods and goddesses, whether it was ancient Greece or Rome or Egypt or whatever. There was a balance. And that, to me, when I think about it, is what is lacking in the world right now, is balance.
Yes. Well, and that's very true. And you see, unfortunately, a lot of the goddess mythology that most people come in contact with has already been tainted by patriarchy.
Yeah.
For instance, if you look at some of the egalitarian myths of goddess spirituality or some of the pre-patriarchal goddess myths, you will see they're very, very different. And I'll just give you one quick example. Demeter and Persephone, for instance,
mm-hmm.
you know, they are the goddesses that were worshipped for 2,000 years. I mean, think of it, 2,000 years.
Mm.
And, you know, there's sort of a blip on the screen. I don't think many people even, you know, can comprehend that very easily. You know, the pre-patriarchal myth of Demeter and Persephone, Hades wasn't even in the story, you know. And then we get the egalitarian myth, Hades is in the story, but it's a love affair between Persephone and Hades. You know, she willingly rules the underworld with him.
Mm.
But then we get the patriarchal story of Demeter and Persephone and Hades, and you have him abducting her, you know, raping her maybe even, forcing her to live down there in the underworld. And, you know, and when we give license to that, those sorts of stories, that's giving license to humans to do bad things.
It is, and the problem is, as I don't have to tell you, but just for a point of discussion, our problem is that all of the religions and belief systems are in the patriarchal, the vengeful God. If you don't do what I tell you, you'll go straight to hell, that kind of mentality. And females are instilled in many religions around the world, many belief systems, are lesser beings. I mean, how do you get over that unbelievable patriarchal, male-dominated attitude?
You know, education, I think. Education, I think, and that takes the form of shows like yours. It takes the form of us actually rewriting and reinterpreting our sacred stories, you know, kicking these old ones that do us no good, you know, kicking them to the wayside, because that's not, those aren't the values we want to see in our society. You know, we want a world of equality and empathy and, you know, because we all are interconnected. You know, we're all in this together. And the sooner we realize that, and start acting that way rather than seeing, you know, people not like us as other, and we're entitled to do bad things to them, you know, whether they're women, whether they're brown-skinned people, whether they have a different God. You know, as soon as we start to, appreciate our diversity and understand that, you know, this, whether it be, you know, Abraham, the entitlement of Abrahamic religions or the entitlement of the male gender, that, you know, this all has to go. Because it doesn't really serve humanity, does it?
Look, I agree. And as I said before, more and more people around the world are turning away from organized religion, moving probably in the direction of spiritual belief, spiritual findings, spiritual teachings, information, knowledge. And do you see this as the beginning of the overturn, the overthrow of organized religion as we know it today?
You know, I do. I think unless religion starts to shift, I think religion will become irrelevant and obsolete, at least if it's a religion that is promoting divisiveness, promoting one gender over another. You know, like Catholicism or Christianity, for instance, that says gay people are an abomination, or gives, you know, men the right to beat their wives, or dominate the household, or force women, you know, to wear a burqa, you know, against their will, because
or go into slavery,
can't control their own libido.
Yeah, this is very true. When I read one of the other contributors to your book, Goddess 2.0, Advancing a New Path Forward, Starhawk writes, in the goddess tradition, healing is sacred. So instead of railing about this whole situation, we need to turn to healing. Do you agree?
Well, I do, because, you know, I've come to understand myself that when we put too much emphasis on the thing we don't want, I think that we give it energy, we give it power. So I think instead of, continuing to say, well, we're against war, we need to be for peace.
Yes.
We're, you know, rather than be against domination, we have to be for partnership and respect. And I think that in itself is healing. And this whole idea of love and partnership and empathy, I think those are values that will help us heal ourselves and heal the world.
Hmm. Yeah, this is very true, because as Starhawk says, we're all part of the same living matrix of that being we call Goddess, part of the same body, and health and prosperity is intertwined with that of our neighbours. And I think that is so important that we can get this balance. I keep coming back to the word balance.
Well, so true. And, you know, and speaking as an American here in the United States, I think we are so isolated from the rest of the world. I think that promotes arrogance. I think that promotes this sense of, we're the only ones on the planet, or we're the only ones that matter. Only 15% of Americans even have a passport, you know. And I think this lack of cultural awareness, it really is a detriment to our psyches. I think it's a detriment to helping us uplift ourselves and vibrate on a higher level and raise our awareness. We really do have to expand our consciousness, if you will, and look much more globally, rather than just this limited view that I think so many Americans have, unfortunately.
Well, I think it's, and the whole society based around materialism is the biggest problem, isn't it? And once you have materialism, then you have profits, you have global companies running things, you have greed, corporations, and so on. So that's not going to be an easy task, is it, to move away from the materialistic society into a more spiritual, more compassionate kind of attitude?
Well, I am hopeful. When I see tens of thousands of people marching in the street, like we did in January right after Trump's inauguration. You know, when I see all of the crowds that I saw over in Europe who were marching against Monsanto, you know, there are so many more of us than they are them. And I think we're just going to have to get to a point where we won't tolerate it, that we, you know, maybe we don't buy their products, you know. You know, we use the power of the purse, you know, use whatever powers we have at our disposal and, you know, make it, you know, help things along so that these behaviors, you know, really it just become taboo, if you will, you know, just totally unacceptable. You know, we really do have to raise the bar. I think way too many of us have been complacent and comfortable and, you know, playing with our toys and gadgets. And, you know, we don't know what's going on around the world. And I think most of us don't even know what our governments are doing.
Yeah.
You know, we don't even know how they work anymore. And I think it's going to take a renaissance of, you know, it almost a new enlightenment, if you will.
But, Karen, there's nothing new about this. In ancient Rome, they called it bread and circuses. Today we call it sex, yes, drugs and rock and roll, technology, smartphones. There's nothing new. It's just an evolution. That's all. How do we move on? And this is the big question, and I think we're going to have to sort of leave that in the minds of our listeners. Your book, Goddess 2.0, Advancing a New Path Forward, it's an anthology. There are some wonderful, wonderful contributors there. So many ideas and thoughts to get people moving along. How can people get hold of it?
If you're in the United States, I would invite you to please contact me directly at my website, KarenTate.com. I have some great sales there that you might want to take advantage of. But if you're not, I would say, you know, your best bet is to order it from a local bookstore or go to one of your online booksellers. I know a lot of us resist going to Amazon because they're another one of those multinational corporations, you know, putting the small, you know, little booksellers out of business. So, you know, I would say, you know, do whatever you have to do. Support your local bookseller if you can.
Yeah.
But if you can't, you can easily get it from Amazon.
Yep, fair enough. There are many online booksellers these days, so that's great. Karen, look, thank you so much. Good to talk to you again, and all the best with your book.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Barry. I really appreciate the opportunity.
There we are. This week's program has given us all quite a lot to think about, hasn't it? I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed presenting it. Thanks for your company, and I'll be back with you next week on Radio Out There.